Thank you so much for joining us on Connecting the Diocese, whether it be Holy Saturday or Easter morning. Always happy to have you with us. My name is Jack Socha. A little bit different show this weekend because of the nature of the weekend. Very tough to straddle the two different days. Holy Saturday is such a strange, somber day. Not as somber as Good Friday at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, but an unsettling day, and especially if the weather is a little bit off. You don't really feel like doing things that are joyous or jocular or ha-ha fun or let's go watch a comedy. At least I don't, anyway. So we tend to be a little more serious. And then, of course, we have the unbridled joy of Easter morning. For those of you listening on Easter morning, I have kind of a general show, a very interesting one, based on something that Bishop Callahan talked about last week, about how the meaning of Holy Week and what the priests have to do is a cornerstone as to why they do what they do. This is the reason for being priests. This is the story condensed down. So we're going to be hearing from Father Nate Kuntz from the Vocations Office more about that. And especially on this Easter, aiming this at people who go, I want to be more part of the church, either by attending Mass more often, or maybe there are some of you out there who say, I have an inkling towards priesthood or religious life. Very interesting. One thing he said that struck me as pretty important, he says, we don't expect you to be perfect saints. We don't expect you to be absolutely above everyone else. Jesus found apostles who are not the most perfect people to begin with. But anyway, we'll be talking more about that coming up. A very good show for Holy Saturday and for Easter as you get ready to go out and do more genuine celebration. Back after this on Connecting the Diocese from the Diocese of La Crosse, Wisconsin. As I'm sure most of you know, the Holy Father has accepted the retirement request from Bishop Callahan. And on May 20th, Bishop Gerard Battersby will be installed as the 11th bishop of the Diocese of La Crosse. Barring any unforeseen technical problems, which is pretty unlikely, the Masses for Easter, which are of course celebrated by Bishop Callahan, will be available on YouTube. They'll be done live, but of course by this time, maybe this evening or tomorrow, if you couldn't catch the Mass because you were going somewhere else, you could watch it. And it'll be a very special one because, again, when you think about it, after all these years, not just here, but everywhere, Bishop Callahan will be celebrating his last Easter Mass as a bishop of the Diocese of La Crosse, and it should be both a very inspiring and somewhat sentimental event. As far as my role in things is concerned, the bishop is scheduled for at least one more session as bishop here on this show, and so we'll be talking to him again in a matter of weeks. Bishop Callahan, once he is Bishop Emeritus Callahan, will be still residing in the Diocese of La Crosse. I think it's quite wonderful that given the fact that he was a guy from the south side of Chicago and had never been to La Crosse when he was assigned here, that he's deciding to spend his retirement years in this same wonderful place. I kind of understand that because, like the bishop, I bounced around the country, and when I was a little kid, I could see the Empire State Building out my back window. But more often than not, the quality of life depends not so much on how many square miles of sidewalk you have, but the people who are in the area. And a little bit like the bishop, I have covered a great deal of the 15,000 square miles of the Diocese of La Crosse in my former commercial radio career, living in a lot of local towns. And even though I met my future wife in Minneapolis, her family is from central Wisconsin, and I got to spend a lot of time with them, and what a great honor that was. So I'm not sure what roles the bishop will take as a bishop emeritus, but I'm sure that he will be doing wonderful things for our area as he retires in La Crosse. A little ethereal sounding music for this special weekend when heaven and earth seem so close together. But now, as promised, here he is.
Father Nate Kuhn.
Yes, right. And Nate, just so people don't know who you are, what are your many jobs?
Well, yes, I'm the Director of Vocations for the Diocese of La Crosse. And part of that is recruitment, working with our seminarians who are in seminary, as well as running our program that is like the preparatory program for men coming into seminary. So directing that program as well.
People will be hearing this on Saturday, Holy Saturday, or Easter Sunday. And if you are, I really appreciate you tuning us in today. I hope this makes your day a bit even more special. Although, how could it be more special? Not because of us, but we have in the diocese, I wouldn't call it a pilot program exactly, but we have a program that is, of course, the seminarians, and you heard Bishop Callahan talking about his life starting out with, you know, with a martini glass and some Necco wafers when he's a kid, all the way to being the bishop of the Diocese of La Crosse. And so we do have this going on. We have these stories to tell. One of these years, we're going to get some of these seminarians and these journey folks in. The week of Holy Week probably is the worst time to try to get anything organized. I'm quite frankly surprised even you're able to get in here today. Because what were you doing all day today now?
Well, I spent the last just over 2 hours hearing confessions. We have what we call the Confessathon down at the cathedral, in which we have four priests at least from about 8 o'clock in the morning till about 6 o'clock in the evening hear confessions all day to give people an opportunity to prepare for, to celebrate the great mystery of what Christ is about to do for us.
Yeah, if you think a Starbucks queue is busy in the morning, it's lined up really well.
It really is.
And also, unless I'm greatly mistaken, again this year, there were volunteers going to the cathedral ahead of time, way ahead of time, to basically clean the pews, clean the confessionals. I did it one time, and I thought that was the neatest thing, because you want to make sure that it's nice that the person goes in, that not an empty Kleenex box or something like that. All these things are done focusing on making everybody comfortable and happy and making the cathedral be what it's supposed to be. Do you have any idea the number of people that you heard confessions from in those hours?
Oh, gosh. I know there are some priests that keep a clicker with them, to kind of just, keep track of the number. And, some of it is for their own, kind of edification.
Yeah, sure.
But I probably, over the course of the 2 hours or so, probably 25.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's an awful lot. There is this, if I'm using the right term, seal of the confessional that I have such respect for, that if you go tell your most innermost concerns to a priest in confession, it doesn't go out of his mouth again.
Correct.
And it's amazing. And we've heard stories in the past where people have confessed of crimes and various things, and there's almost no circumstance that you can think of, because this is not meant to be for everybody else. This is meant for the person and for God. And you process this. I can't imagine the mechanism of doing this, but you are listening intently, but at the same time, you're sending it along. You're kind of like the Wi-Fi router.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah,
it's going. It's you'll say about from your mouth to God's ear. Well, that's basically what we're talking about. And you are not judgmental. You are. It's a fascinating thing. We also had on folks from the marriage tribunal, where people were discussing why their marriage wasn't valid. And again, boy, that you talk about, you never hear anybody say, hey, did you hear anything really interesting in the marriage tribunal today? it doesn't work that way. Yeah. It doesn't work that way. This is among some of the most serious parts of what a priest does. And last week, Bishop Callahan was talking about how this week, Holy Week, that the people have just finished, now it's Easter and Holy Saturday, that this is extremely important to you and meaningful to you. Can you give me an idea of what your perspective is? Do you find yourself too busy to appreciate it, or do you find yourself going, I got this is really incredible and I've got to take time, or what do you do?
I mean, I think this is one of the weeks of the year that I look forward to the most, even though it probably, for the most part, is the most busy as far as the preparation. People coming to confession for themselves to be prepared for what's coming up. But as a priest, especially in the parish, my role is slightly different, being that I'm the vocation director, and so I have a chance sometimes I'll fill in at parishes or do that. But to be a pastor and to be entering into that preparation to make sure that, especially working with, ideally, you have people entering into the church on Easter, on the vigil on Saturday evening. And so you have spent time working and preparing. But then on a kind of a personal level, spending, depending on, how comfortable you are, but spending a lot of time in preparation working with the people in the parish, the liturgy director, the music director, and even on a personal level, preparing and going through and rereading what the church asks of us to do during that special liturgy, right? Beginning on Holy Thursday and kind of one extended liturgy all the way through the Easter Vigil. So there's a lot of time and prep that goes into it, a lot of reading, a lot of reflection, preparing homilies for that, and just all of the things, the different components that go into making sure that, you know, like the volunteers that you mentioned before, trying to make that it as smooth as possible.
Yeah.
Right. Trying to do what the church asks of us to do in the celebration of those liturgies, but also to allow people to come and to be able to pray, right? And to be able to enter into, you know, the great sacrifice of Christ and to just kind of experience that on a personal level, you know, and to do what I can to be able to be, you know, in the person of Christ, but also to make sure that those liturgies run smoothly.
In a very secular term, in my area of so-called entertainment, there's this thing called production values. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you've seen crummy movies where things are not done well. There's things where you could, it's almost imperceptible difference. Years ago, there was a company that came out with a video editing system which they claimed was 98% as good as the really, really, really expensive ones. And it didn't work. It failed because even though it was 98% as good as, say, a commercial done by a multi-million dollar system, people have seen so many good commercials that when something isn't right, they may not even consciously notice it, but they notice it. Mm-hmm. And this is why, you know, we all know that, for example, that if there's an imperfection in the Mass, it does not invalidate the Mass.
Correct.
But on the other hand, you know, you want to do it as right as you can for these people so that their experience is elevated. And they will forgive you if things go a little awry. I was in the cathedral one time when a bat was flying back and forth. And they had to go out with one of those big basket things with the velvet. They usually get, you know, coins and stuff and catch the bat.
Yeah.
They have done it before. But it didn't diminish the Mass. You can't break the Mass. Mm-hmm. You cannot do that. It doesn't work that way. But it is important for you, self-satisfaction, among other reasons, just to say, you know, we did a good job. Mm-hmm. But it's exhausting. I bet you the day after Easter, you're tired.
Absolutely. You just kind of, you know, the joke among priests is that, you know, if anything happens on Easter Monday, most priests will probably be sleeping or taking a nap, you know, recovering from, you know, the Holy Week.
Yeah. What would be important, though, I would think, is that, and again, I'm using a commercial secular thing. When I was in commercial radio, and even now, when Advent and Christmas is coming, I work my tail off to come up with special stuff, special music, special guests, Christmas stories, you know, to make it all really cool. And sometimes Christmas comes and I realize, gosh, I missed most of it because I was so busy since October getting ready for it and doing stuff. And I'm hoping that our priests listening out there don't sit there, you know, on Monday morning and go, ah, nuts. For me, for some reason, this year's Lent went really fast. I don't know why.
I agree. I it was just this last week, and I was talking with someone. I said, "Wow, next week is Holy Week already."
That's amazing. Like,
where did the time go?
Yeah. You think giving up something or doing something for 40 days is going to be like, boom, it's done. Mm-hmm. You know, we did stress also this time that, and Bishop has talked about this, that you can give up something for Lent, or you can add something. And we were thinking about volunteering, helping people, being nice to people, doing whatever. That works too. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping that some people did that because it's a good thing. And keep doing it now.
You know, that's right.
There's some stuff I gave up for Lent years ago I never went back to. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the process. That's good. So what do your charges, the young men that you're dealing with, do during Holy Week?
That's a great question. So the men in the journey program, as we call it, you know, the men preparing to enter seminary next fall, we send them home, right? So they're not directly under my tutelage over the course of Holy Week. And part of that's to free me up to be able to help out and assist at parishes and do what I need to do as a priest. But I think it's an excellent opportunity and an experience for them to be able to go back to their home parishes. You know, so the men from the Diocese of La Crosse go home to their home parishes, or, you know, they'll be in a parish of some sort to assist during the Holy Week liturgies, to take an active part in seeing what goes into it, in the planning, in the process, and kind of helping coordinate from a server's perspective, right? What it means to be able to assist the priest to help ensure that the liturgies run smoothly, kind of that production value, as you were mentioning. Men from other dioceses as well will head back to their home dioceses, whether it's their home parish or, you know, in some dioceses, the bishop asks all men to join him, you know, if he's at the cathedral or if he's in another place throughout the diocese, to be a part of that as well, to kind of travel with this kind of group of them, you know, as a way of making sure that, you know, kind of the pontifical liturgy, as we would say with the bishop, is kind of that much more special. But so it's a great opportunity for these young men to really dive into some of the practical aspects of that. And ideally, you know, they do get a chance to pray, to enter into the liturgy on the kind of the deeper level, but they're going to see it from a different perspective. You know, they're going to be involved. And I remember in my own life, you know, when I was younger as a seminarian, you know, helping out at my home parish, and what a great opportunity it was. You know, the group of us that was serving, you know, we kind of bonded, you know, as we were trying to remember, okay, what comes next? You know, what are we doing? What day is it actually? You know, is it Holy Thursday, Good Friday, Easter Vigil, and trying to keep everything straight. But being able to be, you know, for me, it was being present at the church, you know, spending time at the church, you know, and really kind of getting a fuller, more broad understanding of what this all entails.
Yeah, yeah. And now we should backtrack, or I should say I should backtrack. We have two programs in the Diocese of La Crosse. Now, most people understand what the seminarians do. That's pretty much understood. But the Journey program is within the relative 10 years that I've been here doing these kind of things, is relatively new. And I'll let you explain what it is.
Sure. Yeah, we call it the Journey program, and it's really an opportunity for men who are discerning to enter in and to take a year of, we don't want to say a gap year, because it's not, but it's a year to transition and to really enter into that aspect of wrestling with, is God calling me to enter into seminary? You know, could God be calling me to be a priest? And it's a year in which it's not overly academic. You know, that's one of the challenges of perhaps seminary, is that there is a lot of academic requirements for a young man as he's studying and wrestling with this notion of, what is God calling me to do? Where this year is more focused on developing a life of prayer, being able to strengthen, you know, those prayer habits, different things that they're already doing, and to kind of give that young man a chance over the course of a year to really help make that decision. Am I going to take the next step? We've had this is our seventh year, you know, of running this program. And it is kind of, you know, mentioned at the very beginning, kind of cutting edge. You know, this was a something that Bishop Callahan, you know, coming from his background in religious life, you know, saw a significant importance in developing, having a chance to work with young men as they're entering in, without just kind of pushing them in and saying, well, good luck, hope you make it. But really taking that time, right? In religious life, they call it the novitiate, and it's 1 to 2 years. But really just kind of establishing a foundation of prayer, establishing a relationship with the Lord, to be able to then know what the Lord is calling to take that next step, and to work on some of the human things too. What is it like to live in community with other men? That can be challenging. What is it like to attend daily Mass and have a structure of prayer? What is it like to have a spiritual director, you know, a priest that you talk about how the Holy Spirit is perhaps working in your life? You know, so kind of an introductory element of all of these different things that when they get to seminary, you know, they can hit the ground running.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that there's a number of listeners can probably think of some time in their careers, for example, that, you know, they thought that some job they had or something was going to be a certain way. And once they got into it, all the other stuff showed up. Mm-hmm. I can think of, if I can divergent here, two things. Most recent one, which is a long time ago now, was my first radio job. I went to radio school, and they taught us to be disc jockeys, and how to play records, and how to, you know, da-da-da-da. They didn't teach us how to write commercials, and they didn't teach us how to record commercials very much to speak of. And so I got there, and okay, we need you to write 2 30-second commercials. And I was like, you want me to write a commercial? See, I thought it was all going to be, you're on the air, ha-ha, yeah, I'm a disc jockey, and you go home. No, not even close. And even before that, I went to Army Intelligence School. I learned a bunch of intelligence analysis stuff. I got assigned to the Pentagon. I'm going, this is good. Big door, the fifth floor A-ring, center of the Pentagon. Boop, 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 boop. Open this big combination locked door. And here are these guys smoking cigarettes with IBM Selectric typewriters. And it was kind of like, oh, this is not what I thought it was going to be. Anybody who's a detective out there, or a cop, or a doctor, or a nurse, paperwork. Well, okay, I'm sure you probably have examples of young men who've come to you who have the wildest ideas of what being a priest is going to be like.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, okay. What do you know about organization of a pancake breakfast?
Exactly.
They have to understand they are on an adventure. Mm-hmm. And not all of the adventure is just sailing calmly down the river.
That's right. Or doing what you really like to do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. How many people do we know that actually do things they really like to do? Yeah. You know, there's not too many. They can do it all the time.
That's right.
They're very fortunate. But the stuff that you really like to do, as far as a priest is concerned, you obviously like the practice of the presence of God, mm-hmm. as Brother Lawrence once said. And actually, if you have that kind of a pull that's really strong, it's difficult to not do it.
That's right.
You know, when did you finally decide you wanted to be a priest?
Well, I like to divide that into a couple different kind of landmark moments throughout mm-hmm. the course of my life. You know, I began when I was younger, probably around the fourth grade. Mm-hmm. You know, so you know, pretty young, about 10 years old. Really started to think about it. That was the first opportunity that I had to serve at Mass. You know, so I was invited by the pastor of my home parish, and you know, I would get a chance to serve with my brother, my older brother. Now I'm kind of competitive, so it was always something that we looked forward to. So my brother and I, and then later on my younger siblings as well. But we would show up to Mass, and in my mind, secretly, I would hope that there was no servers. Right, the assigned servers wouldn't be there so that I could go up and serve. Ah. You know, because we were on a rotation and I got to serve every so often. But I really enjoyed doing it. And at about 10 or 11 years old, being up next to the priest, it was very significant for me. Not that, you know, it was, you know, I could be active and not get quote unquote bored, but to be up next to the priest was something that, you know, I could see in what the priest was doing. There was a passion, you know, for what he was doing. And that there was this kind of deep significance to what he was accomplishing. And even though it was ordinary for in the eyes of a 10-year-old, you know, seeing that this is significant. And maybe I could see myself doing that one day. So the initial call probably began around that time, 10, 11 years old. And it kind of stayed with me. I would say that you know, by the time I got into high school, you know, the thought was still in the back of my mind, but I would say that it wasn't necessarily up front. I was actively kind of thinking about what I wanted to do post high school after graduation, but you know, kind of these, you know, dreams that you have, like, well, what do I want to be? You know, what do I want to become? And it was, you know, that thought kept popping up in my mind. You know, maybe I'm supposed to be a priest. It had been cultivated too. You know, there were people in the parish in my religious education classes and things that had been encouraging me, saying things like, you know, maybe you ever thought about being a priest? You might make a good priest. So anyone listening who, you know, thinks they know a young man who, you know, might make a good priest, don't hesitate to tell them because that has a significant impact. And it did for me. So I got to high school, or the end of high school, reaching graduation, and, you know, I was like, I really don't know what I want to do. And I really started to kind of wrestle with, well, maybe this idea of the priesthood, which has been with me now for you know, quite a number of years, is maybe there's something to this. Maybe this is really the Lord kind of continuing to kind of nudge me in that direction. And, you know, so kind of building up the courage to, you know, reach out to the vocation director and talk with him a little bit and talk with the pastor of my home parish and kind of get that process in motion, the application process, and being accepted then, going through the application process right around Christmas of my senior year of high school. So entering into that those last months of my high school, knowing that the following year I was going to be entering the seminary, which wasn't easy, in fact. You know, one might think that you make a decision like that, you kind of go for it, and you go through that process, and you get the acceptance letter, that now there's like a kind of a release, right? You can kind of take a deep breath, and that kind of burden goes away whether or not you're going to be doing that. Well, for me, it was almost the opposite. You know, for me, it was, you know, the wonderful people at my home parish were very encouraging and saying, oh, you're going to be a priest. And I was kind of like, wait a second, time out, right? I'm not sure if I'm going to be a priest, but I'm fairly certain that I'm being called to go to seminary. And at that time, it was, you know, I kind of wrestled with the idea, or just, it almost became much more difficult, because by me signing up and kind of going through that process and being accepted, it almost felt like that was it. I was done. You know, you mentioned, you know, that in the military, you know, you sign on the dotted line, right? And you're committed, and that's it. You know, that's a huge decision, one that is, you know, very honorable. I mean, the seminary is not quite to that level, right?
Yeah, it isn't like you are now owned by us.
Correct.
And, because they don't want people who are owned.
Exactly.
They want you to be there because you love what you're doing.
Yes.
And this is the trick. Now, did you go to a Catholic high school or a public high school?
I went to a public high school.
Okay. This is good. Because what did your buddies think when you told them what your plans were?
It was mixed. You know, some of my close friends, you know, that I had known for quite a while, you know, we had talked and knew that this was kind of an idea floating around in my mind, and, you know, kind of knew that I was kind of entering into that process, and then, you know, me sharing with them that I'd been accepted. So they had kind of had a little bit of a chance to wrestle with the notion that you're going to priest school, as they called it. Not preschool, but priest school, right? And they're like, oh, okay. You know, some of them were like, why would you ever do something like that? Like, you must be crazy. And you know, the culture at the time too, being in a public school with those who were either non-religious or from a different background, religious background, you know, there was some negative views of priesthood, you know, so there was some ridicule that I received, and people thinking that, again, I was crazy, that no one in their right mind would ever want to do something like that. But I would say, especially my close friends, were supportive, you know, kind of that notion of if this is where your heart's at, you know, yeah, we hope you do well.
Yeah. I've always wondered about people who say, you must be crazy. For one thing, I don't know, this is partly because I majored in comparative religion. I got to study a lot of different religions, right? I am impressed by people who are so in love with God that they want to spend more time with Him. And this is whether you just pray a lot at home, that's fine. But I mean, people who are enough to become a priest or a rabbi or imam or, you know, a Buddhist monk or whatever, I'm always happy to meet them. Because, you know, I can meet NASCAR drivers, and that's fine if you're a NASCAR driver. I'm sure we have several listening right now, but on Easter Sunday. But you know, I think that it's fascinating to talk to these people, because you can learn something from them. Mm-hmm. And you may discover that you don't particularly follow what they're talking about, but it doesn't mean that they're totally worthless. You know, and we had Bishop Callahan here several years ago with a retiring rabbi and the Lutheran bishop. And these guys got together, they were just fine. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's really a wonderful thing. The tolerance of other religions is very important. As long as they're not trying to jam it down your throat or force you by coercion to believe what they believe. And in most cases, that doesn't really happen, except in the news in certain places and certain people. But as a rule, when people are truly interested in God get together, they get along. You know, they really do. And that was that old joke about a priest, a rabbi, and a Muslim imam get together at a bar. And no, this isn't a joke. And the Catholic Church, my goodness, look at Pope Francis. I loved it. He was in the hospital for a couple of days with the respiratory infections, and he comes on and goes, well, I'm not dead.
That's exactly it.
You know, I'm sorry. This is great stuff. As somebody said, religion is not taught, it's caught. And we keep throwing out these tennis balls or pickle balls.
That's right.
And if you hear that loud slapping noise, they're bouncing them back to us. There could be somebody listening right now. There could be a woman who wants to become religious. We have the consecrated virgins in the world. There are people doing ways of experiencing God you have never even dreamed of. And it's really out there. And frankly, the way to start is to contact you.
That's right.
What's the first thing? How is there an average age of a person who contacts you, or is it all over the place?
I would say the average age probably in recent years has maybe increased a little bit. You know, so we're finding a lot of young men and young women who are discerning religious life, who are reaching out, and they're in their college years. Mm-hmm. You know, I do work with some young men in high school. I do some traveling, you know, to do kind of vocation awareness type things, where I go to the Catholic schools and I go to parishes or religious education programs. And, you know, so being able to speak with younger students, you know, elementary, middle, high school. But I would say primarily, you know, kind of later into the high school and then into college. Sometimes it's post-college as well. So, I mean, we've had a smattering of ages across the board. You know, we had, you know, a gentleman who was in his 50s.
Yeah. You know? It's like I saw a billboard. It was for a Jewish organization, but they had about, you know, go to church or go to synagogue, basically. And they're going, there's a billboard on the interstate that says, consider this a sign from God. Well, yeah, and there are times when people feel this tug and they say, I can't get this out of my head. Mm-hmm. What are some of the first questions a person might ask you when they come in that, you know, is there a typical thing they ask you a lot? You know, they go, Father, what, fill in the blank. I have no idea.
Yeah, usually by the time they get to contacting me, you know, they have built up enough courage, you know, to kind of be able to verbalize, you know, well, what does seminary look like? You know, who goes to seminary? Can I be a normal person and still go to seminary? I mean, that is one of my favorite questions, because sometimes I think that, you know, people think you have to be essentially a walking, talking saint in order to go to the seminary. Yeah. And you have to be perfect.
Yeah.
And that, you know, you have to kind of leave behind your personality or your talents or your passions, which isn't the case at all.
No. I have two words to respond to that. Father Walieski.
Yes. Excellent example.
This guy, he, you know, you can go to our website and look at the servant of God, Father Walieski, who was just drawn to service in South America. And it took the longest time for him to get there, because all of the people above him thought he just wanted to go see South America. And when he got there, the stuff he did, you know, one guy, just, and then of course he had help with Father Sebastian, you know, many others before him, you know, Monsignor Hirsch. You can make a difference. Now, maybe you're not going to make exactly the same difference as Father Walieski did, building churches in Bolivia and doing things like that. But if you're in a small parish in central Wisconsin, you will have an impact, unbelievable impact.
I always like to say, you know, you can never put a limit on what God can do with you, and what he has done has given you these incredible gifts and talents. And I like to quote, you know, St. John Henry Newman, who talked about, he used an analogy, you know, we are all a link in a chain. You know, we each have a part to play, you know, and God has given us the ability to take and use those gifts and talents to really do exactly what you mentioned, to take that into the world, to make an impact, and to be able to bring Christ to other people, or to, you know, be an example for others.
I've been reading in the papers about the mental health crisis among teens for a lot of things. I mean, but a priest who can reach out to young people and get them to come to church and come to the community and be involved in the community will do a great service to that young person. I was in a youth fellowship from fifth grade all the way through high school, and it was absolutely incredible and important, because when I was out on my own in Washington, D.C. at 20 years old in the 1960s, boy, I had the rudder that I could steer. I don't even know if anyone understands how long the period of seminary lasts. Even I don't know that. Yeah, so it's only 6 weeks, right?
That's good. We just get somebody and crank them out really quickly, and hope for the best, right?
Yeah, the pre-stomatic, you're out there, buddy.
Just turn them out.
That's right.
Well, unfortunately, that's not the case. We wish.
Fortunately, it's not.
Well,
the case.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, we need priests, right? Yeah. And we wish we could make more, if we want to say it that way. Yeah. But the process is significant. The process is involved, and roughly it's 8 or 9 years. If a guy is coming in without a college degree, if they're coming in out of high school, to do the program that we have here, what we call the Journey Program. And then enter into college, whether that's 3 or 4 years, and then going into the study of theology and doing 4 years of theology studies. One of the things that I always like to compare that to, if I tell people and they're like, wow, that's roughly the same as a doctor. You're in school nearly as long as a doctor. A doctor is 8, 9, 10 years, and you're almost the same. I said, well, yeah. Would you want a doctor who's only studied a couple years to be doing surgery on you? Who doesn't necessarily know the ins and outs of the human body? Of course not, right? Mm-hmm. And on a spiritual level, the church says in her wisdom that, the men who are studying to be priests, are in a way a doctor of the soul. To be able to walk with people, to be able to bring Christ to people, there's that intellectual, that learning that we need to have, that, we study, we learn about scripture, we learn about the teachings of the church, we learn about how God works, right? Both in our own lives and in the world, so that we can then ideally, foster that growth with people that we minister to in the parishes to bring Christ there. But we also see it on the other side of things too. I was just privileged to be able to hear reconciliation, hear people's confessions. It's a very intimate and very tender moment, right? And it's not me doing it, it's the Lord, but kind of being an instrument in the midst of that, to quote Father Joe Walieski, a pencil in the hand of God, right? The beautiful image of, God using the priest, especially in those tender or difficult moments, right? People who are struggling with the loss of a family member as they're preparing to celebrate the funeral, or, just different things going on in life, that a priest can work with them to give them a spiritual grounding, a foundation by which they can kind of regain their footing, or have the courage to move forward to encounter the challenges that lay ahead of them.
I take this stuff very seriously. Well, again, silly story, but to make some point, I'm not sure what it is. I'm 21, I'm in California, I'm majoring in comparative religion. I really like this stuff. And there's a knock on my door one like Saturday afternoon, and this young couple, this young guy and girl, kind of immature looking, kind of go, hi, are you Jack Socha? Yeah. Are you 21? I go, yeah, I'm 21. She says, hi, would you do a marriage ceremony for us? And I go, what? And they said, well, we got the license here. We're members of the Poof, You're a Minister Church. We can make you a minister by just saying you're a minister, and then you can marry us. I said, no. Mm-hmm. And I'm not doing it. I gave him some other excuse, but I don't remember what it was. But priests, 9 years makes sense. Mm-hmm. Because you have to deal with people having theological crises, even though they may not know what the word theological is, dark night of the soul kind of stuff, and you have to deal with it. And with all the things having gone on in our country recently, people are just shell-shocked. And, at the same time, I'm thinking, and we keep talking about this on the show, this is the time to go to church, not to leave church and go do something else. Because what are you going to learn in church? You're going to learn how to be a whole person. And this is what you guys have to do. And before you can do that, you have to be able to have the footnotes to show what you're talking about.
After up to 8 years, it isn't like they just put you on the assembly line at church. For one thing, there is a magnificent service called an ordination.
An incredible celebration, right? Probably, the greatest, my favorite celebration, not just because I'm vocation director, but and that I've been ordained a priest, but the beauty of the church and welcoming and the a man who has entered into this and who's now fully dedicating his life in service of Christ and his church. And then I'm continuing to work on, we have a number of young men that I'm working with in preparation for entering our program. So some in the works.
Yes. Interesting thing, I'd heard this and I didn't really experience it until some years ago. I was doing the radio stuff
and it was a ordination. And I don't know who got me to do it, but someone said, you should go record these guys right after they're ordained, right? And I'm going, this is not a good thing. They first go out and greet parents and friends and all this stuff. And I think I did get to talk to some of them. But it was said that after a man is ordained, almost immediately there's a subtle change. And I talked to these guys, and the immensity of what was going to be beginning had already settled in on them. They were by no means, they're still wet behind the ears, you know, and that's the fun part. But when they become assistant pastors, you know, that's mm-hmm. great stuff. there's a change. And for a person who can spend a little time talking to them, they're subtly different. It's like they've reached a goal. They've accomplished something that they've been after their whole life. And at this moment, and I'm going, hi, what do you think of this? With my microphone stuck in my mouth, you know. But anyway, it is interesting. Mm-hmm. And then the assistant pastor, now you said 9 years. How long are you an assistant? How long are you a greenhorn?
Well, you know, in our diocese, we're currently very blessed to be able to have, you know, the priests that we do. We're assisted by many, you know, priests from other countries as well, but serving, you know, the people of the diocese. But one of the process that Bishop Callahan has really imposed is really to make sure that guys are able to grow in those first years of priesthood and not be thrown into becoming a pastor, as we were mentioning before, with all the different components of administration and finance and human resources and kind of the running a what would be kind of a small corporation, oh. right? To be almost like a CEO, but to be able to kind of experience that firsthand, to take on some of those responsibilities on a lesser level, maybe to begin to help with a budget, to be able to work with the pastoral council, to be able to see the daily goings on of what parish life is all about, while being able to participate in the sacramental life as a priest as well. So we have usually 4 years of, you know, being an associate to kind of help get us on our feet, to help get us kind of on the job training. We've spent 9 years in seminary learning the book stuff, but then the practical stuff, you know, the classic saying is, well, they didn't teach us that in seminary, right? You know, the application of what we've learned, you know, the transition that goes from taking it from a book and learning and looking at examples of different things to now putting into practice, dealing with real people.
Yeah. There's a thing in the broadcast business called doing air checks. And one of the most, painful and useful things that happens is that your boss, your program director, will have recorded your show. And then you will sit at his desk and he'll play parts of it back. And he'll say, now this place here, you see what you did? You said the weather, but you forgot to say what the current temperature is or whatever. And this gets you to do a better job. And my understanding is that as much as they possibly can, they will try to pair up the associate pastor with the appropriate senior pastor so they work well together. Mm-hmm. There was somebody on the radio years ago was talking about how, you talk about my yoke is light, right? Well, they said that if you ever watch someone, the oxen work in pairs, and that they said the guy who carves the yoke, there's usually a stronger ox and a slightly lesser ox. He makes the yoke different shapes so they fit properly together. And this is kind of what happens when you pair up these priests, because you get to know these guys pretty well. You kind of know the priests pretty well. You kind of know that Father so-and-so over here in whateverville would be a real good one to talk to this guy, because in this one area he needs a little bit of support. And this is a great thing. The other thing I should mention, that the RCIA program is fundamentally concluding. There's more stuff that goes on after Easter, but the culmination of more than 9 months. Are you beginning to see a pattern here, folks? The church wants you to understand what it is. It takes 9 months at least to fully understand why you might even want to be Catholic. And so it's not so unusual that they would have a journey program and then a seminary program and then assistant pastors. They're putting me out to pasture. Assistant pastors, because it's really important stuff. you know, this isn't like you're working at Whippy Dip, you know, and That's you right. didn't know how to make the soft serve right. Mm-hmm. I don't know if people understand this. This is really serious business, because the people who are doing it, priests, bishops, cardinals, the Pope, to them, this is probably one of the most important thing in the world.
Yeah.
Because if you miss out on it, you're really missing out on a whole bunch, just a whole bunch. You know, you don't want to be on your deathbed, but they'll joke about, I wish I could have spent more time at the office. But in this case, I wish I could have spent more time understanding what God was about. Mm-hmm. And the information is out there. Or, yeah. as they said in the X-Files, the truth is out there. You talk to these priests. And if you're one of these people who you're listening to this today and going, boy, they're making an awful compelling reason why I should be looking into this, because I'm really feeling this. You will not only learn what the program is, but you may also have alternatives. There are brothers, there are people who are monastic, there are all kinds of other things most of us don't know much about. And, you know, it doesn't mean everybody is going to walk out with the perfect fit, but you'll at least know. And for those of you who, once you walk out, after you listen to Father, you know, and you go, gee, this is really good. So let me ask you this. We talked about the first step is contact you. How do we contact you?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. So, you know, if you could go visit the website, you know, the Dasein website, and we have a tab on the right side that says vocations, you know, and there'll be opportunities to look at our current seminarians. We have information there, you know, all kinds of information if you want to learn more about it. But there's also the contact info. Right?
Yeah.
So contact info for me and the vocation office. Renee is the one who runs the office, you know, and she kind of keeps my head on straight oftentimes. So, you know, if you call the office, oftentimes you'll be the one to answer and be able to get in touch with me. And, you know, we begin to have that conversation. We begin to say, you know, hey, let's, you know, we can email back and forth, or we could talk on the phone. You know, if you'd like to sit down and chat and maybe grab a bite to eat or grab a cup of coffee, I'd be more than willing to do that, to set something up, even to travel, right? If, yeah. I mean, if you're not able to drive all the way down to La Crosse, you know, I'd be happy to, you know, drive up and meet you wherever would be easiest.
Well, I think, again, and there's no obligation. You're not going to come with a sheet of paper and like this pin to take a drop of blood. The person is discerning what they're doing. You're also discerning. And you're going to honestly say, you know, I really understand your zeal. I don't know if priesthood is exactly what, we have a diaconate program. You know, this may suit your particular needs better, or maybe the other way around. Maybe the person says, what's the diaconate about? And then you're talking to them and say, well, you know, you could also consider priesthood. Could happen. It really could. The URL is diolc.org. It's really simple, diolc.org. And you can navigate around. It's pretty well put together. And by the way, all of the extra old shows are on as diolc.org. You can hear things from previous shows as well. And also, I should say, with all sincerity, if you hear the show and you say, I want to hear this again, or I want to play this for somebody who's been talking to me, diolc.org/connecting. It's an MP3 audio file. You can click on it to play it. No charge, no password, no email address. And if you want to, you can even download it onto your, you know, your iPhone or whatever you happen to have. So you could save it for somebody else and say, you really should be hearing this, Fred. They're saying the same things you are. only you're funnier than they are. But
probably true.
And also, that's another point we should make. You don't give up your sense of humor because you joined the church.
Correct.
You know, you don't. You just don't. These fun-loving, enjoyable priests, they're loving what they're doing. And so jokes, fine. Playing golf, fine. You know, I mean, going to movies, fine. It isn't like you just sit there going, I'm a priest and I can't do nothing.
Yeah, that's exactly the opposite of what a priest should be doing.
Yeah, it's a good thing. So seriously, if you are considering these things, They really would like to talk to you. And also, if you are listening outside of the diocese, there are offices in other dioceses around the country. If you're in our diocese, 15,000 square miles. Now, this is a good question. I don't want to steal priests from other dioceses, so don't get me wrong, folks. But can a priest Can a person living in La Crosse go someplace else to apply, or vice versa? Can a person living in Iowa come up here? Is that going to cause problems with the diocese in Iowa?
So that's an excellent question. I mean, something that I have dealt with, you know, as I've traveled to some of the universities, you know, let's use, for example, University of Wisconsin at La Crosse here, you know, going over to the Newman Center and working with young men who, you know, have expressed an interest in discerning and trying to figure out, you know, am I called to seminary? You know, so I can have a conversation with them, but my role as vocation director is to make sure that, like you mentioned, you're not stealing. You know, we don't want to steal guys like, well, you should stay here, right? You should study for us.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a, kind of a friendly banter. You know, oftentimes, you know, the vocation directors know one another, especially kind of regionally, locally. You know, so like, for example, the vocation director from Madison or Milwaukee or Superior, Green Bay, and go across the river and like Winona, Rochester, or St. Paul, Minneapolis. And, you know, you start kind of going a little further into like Illinois. Like, I've met many of these vocation directors. You know, we get together every year. We have a vocation director conference in which we have a chance to kind of get together and talk about what's going on in like our region, right? And so we get to talk about, you know, different places that have guys from all over, and we get to contact with those vocation directors. So if a guy from, for example, UW La Crosse comes to me and says, you know what, I think God's calling me to, you know, think about the priesthood and maybe enter seminary. And I'll say, great, let's talk about that. He says, oh, by the way, I'm from Milwaukee. Okay. I don't say, well, good luck. I hope for the best.
Yeah.
But what I'll do is I'll actually reach out to Father John Lococo, who is the vocation director from Milwaukee, and I'll say, call him up and say, hey, Father John, you know, I got this young man named Bill, and you know, Bill said that he is interested in you know, discerning and interested in the priesthood. So I have his contact information. I talked to him, and he said he'd be willing to, you know, I could pass that information on to you. So, you know, here you go.
Yeah, right. You're all working for the same boss.
Correct.
And so that covers it pretty much. Father, thank you so much for being here. And I just love talking to you because I keep thinking of all these young guys who are going to change the world. And they really do. You know, they absolutely do. And they may not notice it right away. But then again, Father Walieski was just hammering stuff and fixing people's houses, you know, and he's changed the world. And so what more can you ask for, right?
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really enjoy coming on and talking. And you know, one of the things that is just getting that information out there, you know, kind of sometimes the priesthood can seem like this mysterious thing.
Yeah.
Right. But when you start to dig into it a little bit more, you know, it's real human beings, you know, and it's an opportunity to, you know, God might be tugging on your heart. God might be calling you or someone, you know, maybe a son, maybe a grandson, maybe, you know, the young neighbor that lives down the road and, that you see at Mass every day or every weekend. And you think, wow, this young man might have a calling. So to be able to talk to them, or like you said, to be able to go back and to listen to some of this, and or to put them in contact with me, you know, or if, you know, they're still up in the air about it, you know, to reach out and we can have a conversation. It's not like I'm not forcing anyone, right? And that we want the men who freely want to follow God's call.
Absolutely.
And if I'm trying to force them to do something else, then I'm not doing my job.
There you go. Now, one final question before we have to finish this up. Easter Sunday, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you get to eat Easter dinner?
That's a good question.
Are you awake enough to eat Easter dinner?
That's probably the better question,
yeah,
right?
Do you?
I will have a chance to eat Easter dinner, right? I'll have a chance to go visit my family once kind of everything is finished. I actually have the privilege this year of being able to go back home.
Ah, very
and
good.
So I will be able to celebrate with the pastor of my home parish. He's generously said that I could come and join him for those celebrations, which isn't necessarily doesn't happen very often, right? Mm-hmm. My ability to go back home and celebrate Mass with the people that I grew up with.
That's neat.
I'll have a chance. And in other years when I was in parish, you know, parish life, and, you know, I usually by Easter, Easter evening, by the time everything got all cleaned up and, you know, things like that. And, you know, maybe depending on how far away I was from home, or even there's been times where, you know, families of the parish had invited me to join them. And that was really a special kind of moment.
Yeah. But falling asleep on the ham is not a good
thing. Well, they understand, but they kind of frown on that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Father, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
Whether it be Holy Saturday or Easter Sunday, sometimes you want to just sit back quietly and maybe read something inspiring or listen to something inspiring. Where do you go? And of course, you can try wading your way through thousands of videos on YouTube to find one that's just right. But a much better idea is to go to the Diocese of La Crosse website, diolc.org. Here you can hear Bishop Callahan's Easter message. You can listen to homilies about Easter. You can, if you want to, begin taking a course from Franciscan University at Steubenville, absolutely free for folks in the Diocese of La Crosse. If you're feeling a little unsettled by all of the meanness and tragedy that you see in the news, you could find that about good things going on around the world through our missions department. Also, you can meet some of the children from Casa Hogar in Peru and see their pictures and hear their stories as well. It'll make you feel pretty good about what goes on around here. You'll also be able to find links to all kinds of places that are doing all kinds of things helpful to folks in need. Catholic charities, adoption services, so many things more. You can check a calendar of events to see what's happening at your parish or other parishes in your area. There's so many things you can look at the Diocese of La Crosse website, diolc.org. There's also an area that you can leave a prayer request for a loved one or some people that you know that just need prayers. And, of course, we have the last 100 radio shows we've had on at diolc.org/connecting. There's no charge to hear them or download them if you wish. You haven't got to register or give a password or give your email address or anything like that. You just go to them, find one that you think may be interesting, and click on it to listen or click on it to download it to your iPhone or whatever you happen to have. All this to help enrich your faith journey at diolc.org. The Diocese of La Crosse website. Jack Socia with you saying goodbye for now for Connecting the Diocese. Happy Easter, everybody. Happy, happy, glorious Easter. See you next week. On the first day of the week, very early in the morning, they came to the tomb, bringing the spices they had prepared. They found the stone rolled away from the tomb. They went in, but did not find the body of the Lord Jesus. While they were perplexed about this, suddenly two men stood by them in dazzling clothes. So the women were terrified and bowed down to the ground. "Why are you looking for the living among the dead?" asked the men. "He is not here, but he has risen. Remember how he spoke to you when he was still in Galilee, saying, 'It is necessary that the Son of Man be betrayed into the hands of sinful men, be crucified, and rise on the third day.' And they remembered his words." Returning from the tomb, they reported all these things to the 11 and to all the rest. Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary the mother of James, and the other women with them were telling the apostles all these things. But these words seemed like nonsense to them, and they did not believe the women. Peter, however, got up and ran to the tomb. When he stooped to look in, he saw only the linen cloths, so he went away amazed at what had happened.
Let us pray then as Jesus taught us. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Amen. And may the blessing of Almighty God, the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit descend upon you and remain with you forever. Amen.